Welcome to the Be a Kids Hero podcast, a conversation for parents, teachers, and other caring adults, offering expert insight and advice to help us best protect the children in our lives. Now, here's your host, Ginger Cadleck.
Hello and welcome. Hi, this is Ginger Cadleck, and thank you for joining me today on the Be a Kids Hero podcast. My guest today is Tamara Hill, who is a licensed therapist that specializes in working with children and adolescents who suffer from mood disorders and disruptive behavioral disorders. Tamara strives to help parents to realize and actualize their strengths in both their home environments as well as in their relationships within their communities. She credits her career passion to a divine calling and is internationally recognized for corresponding literary works as well as appearances on radio and other media platforms, including PsychCentral.com, where she is a columnist. She is also the author of the book Mental Health in a Failed American System, What Every Parent, Family, and Caregiver Should Know, and is the founder of her website, AnchoredInKnowledge.com. She is an absolute delight, and I know you're going to enjoy listening to Tamara. So please join me in welcoming Tamara to our show. Well, Tamara, thank you so much for joining me on today's show. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thank you so much, Ginger.
Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you became a therapist and what led you to writing?
Absolutely. Well, I started at a private college in Pittsburgh. I'm not sure if any of your listeners are familiar, but it's Chatham University.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, love that school. And I had the opportunity to delve right into counseling psychology, and they had a great accelerated program where I started working with Western Psychiatric Institute and Clinic. There is where I had my first experience of early onset psychosis in children. It was astounding, Ginger, some of the things that I had witnessed with my eyes. And I mean, we're talking about kids who are 8, 9, 10 who are seeing and hearing things. Wow. One of the major issues with those kids in that hospital was trauma. That was the big part of their hallucinations and their delusions. So taking classes at Chatham and then doing internship through Western Psych, that's where I think I got started. I think that's where I started recognizing how big this was and how challenging for families. And so, Ginger, I just, you know, kept taking more and more classes, doing more internships. And we'll probably get to this later, but my experiences with children, it just got worse from there.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Let's do get into that in a little bit. And just for the audience, can you define trauma for us? What does that really mean?
A lot of people think that trauma is just a bad experience that you can eventually get over, and it's not. It's actually an experience that you are unprepared for, and it outweighs your coping skills. You're not able to cope at the moment with whatever situation has come into your life. So for example, many of my kids right now, they're actually in a residential treatment facility. Mm-hmm. Most of these kids have either lost a parent to murder, a medical condition like cancer or diabetes, or just abandonment. And one of the biggest triggers for their trauma tends to be the fact that they don't have coping skills. They don't have coping skills, Ginger. They don't have the skills to deal with what reality has brought them.
So, Tamara, I'm sure you deal with kids of all ages.
Yes.
And dealing with trauma. So how are little ones supposed to even get those coping skills?
That's a great question. And typically my kids range from the ages of 8 to 19 years of age. But sometimes, you know, I will get 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds. I think the biggest part of kids developing coping skills, especially for under age 8, is the parents. I think parents, they really are the child's only stability. So if kids are, you know, witnessing that mom and dad are doing well with the trauma, that mom and dad are getting therapy, that helps a great deal. Kids pick up on everything. The other piece of that is therapy. I think getting a child a trauma therapist is important because we have, as trauma therapists, the skills to teach kids coping skills. A coping skill, Ginger, could be as simple as deep breathing, self-soothing techniques, singing, whatever the kid enjoys doing can be a coping skill.
Now, you mentioned that you have some children in the residential treatment facility that sounds like they don't have parents. Is that correct?
Most of them do not. It's typically a guardian or the state.
Okay.
Is the
guardian. Yeah. Okay. So do the guardians of those children go through training, like trauma training, to help them better, you know, help the kids deal through that or deal with that?
Wow. I hate to say this, and I don't want to seem pessimistic, mm-hmm. but no. And that's the scary part. They do not. A lot of parents who are in the foster care system, or they're being educated on adoption, they go through specific classes, but it's very rarely on trauma.
Wow. Okay. Gosh. Yeah. So what would you recommend to parents, like, in terms of actually trying to go through and train themselves on how to deal with trauma? What are some tips that you would offer parents?
Sure. I think the first thing is, you know, asking around. Word of mouth is huge, especially if you're in a, you know, a small city or a small area. Just asking someone, hey, do you know of a trauma therapist in the area? Somebody who has worked with kids who have experienced, you know, severe trauma. The other thing, I think websites, and I'm going to give one right now, it's Child Welfare Information Gateway.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome website.
Yes, it is.
Awesome. Love that website.
That's a government website, correct?
It is. Yeah. It is. And the great part about it is they offer specific resources by location where you can actually attend certain conferences or library events for free.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I love that. And then the other piece in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Ginger, I would recommend AGH, Center for Traumatic Stress.
AGH, Center for Traumatic Stress?
Yes, it's okay. An awesome resource and actually the nation's most educated and astute psychiatrist works there. And he has had great training on trauma.
Oh, fantastic. I will make sure that I get that website link and we'll include it in the show notes so people can go and check out that website along with the Child Welfare Information Gateway. So those are wonderful resources. Thank you for sharing those.
Sure.
Now, what are some of the common challenges that families face when they're trying to get trauma care or mental health care?
Oh, boy. I think one of the major issues is finding a therapist that actually makes the family feel like they're making progress. I've had many parents come to me, say, you know, my kid's not progressing, something's not right here, this is the 15th therapist we've had, you know, what can I do? And I think for a lot of parents, the number one challenge is trying to find a therapist who truly gets the family, can utilize skills, and just be gentle. You know, I think, you know, a lot of therapists fail to recognize that kids who are traumatized, they really need to be supported and loved and gently handled. So I've had parents, Ginger, who say, you know, my kid's therapist is trying to force him or her to talk. And so that's one of the issues. And then also, I think another major issue is income. It's difficult to afford a trauma therapist.
Oh, I see. Now, for victims of crime, let's say that they've been through some kind of abuse or something like that, I know that there's VOCA funding available, which is Victims of Crime Act funding.
Yes.
So hopefully, you know, for parents out there that might be challenged with trying to find, you know, funding for a therapist, that is something that you can take a look at and see if you can, you know, see if that might be able to help you
secure
a therapist and some resources to help out with. So,
yes.
For sure. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Tamara to share with us some of her experience as a therapist and some of the things that she referenced earlier that she's seen. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Be a Kids Hero podcast is proud to be part of the Dr. Will's neighborhood of podcasts. Join the best conversation in town. Stop by and check out all the podcast neighbors at drwill.com.
Welcome back. We are here with Tamara Hill, therapist, author, and columnist, and just all-around terrific gal who's sharing information about trauma with us. And Tamara, you referenced earlier that you've seen a lot of really kind of bad cases. Can you share some of the things that you've experienced and seen with kids and families?
Oh, absolutely. I think one experience for me that's very highlighted in the back of my mind is I had worked in a residential treatment facility for at least 2 years, and that experience was the most emotionally draining that I've ever had. In that residential treatment facility, we had kids who had been, you know, molested multiple times during, you know, various parts of their lives. So from 5 years old to 18, from 9 to 16, I mean, these kids were really traumatized. Kids who were left to feed themselves, you know, one case that I had was a baby, 7 years old, who was still in diapers, was not potty trained.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, had issues with encopresis and enuresis, so difficulty holding urine and soiling themselves. And I can give you really quickly just one case that I had. I had a seven-year-old young lady, wonderful, just wonderful. And unfortunately, she struggled with enuresis. She soiled herself often, had a difficult time with language. She wasn't speaking or walking at the appropriate times. Her developmental milestones were delayed. Lovely young lady. However, any time in session, I would either, you know, touch her arm or applaud her or, you know, tell her how smart she is or great she is, she would just tailspin into the most dramatic emotional breakdown. And I could never figure that out. I mean, I had reached out for support from mentors and supervisors, and I couldn't understand, why is this young lady so sensitive to compliments and compassion? So, I mean, she would start throwing things, chairs, kicking, screaming, scratching, pulling at hair. She would yank out sections of her hair to where staff would have to restrain her just to ensure safety. It was awful.
How old was she?
She was 7 years of age at
the
time.
Seven. Okay. Is this the same one who had the challenges with you said the word, but like soiling themselves, and that the same person?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's the same. Okay. Same patient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Very frightening experience, Ginger, and I think that changed my vision of my field. It also changed my perspective of myself in the world. Very powerful experience for me.
Wow, that would be. Were you ever able to figure out why she reacted that way?
Yes. Her dad would actually compliment her and, you know, touch her prior to violating her.
Okay. Yeah. I think it might have led there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, in other cases that you've had where you've dealt with counseling child abuse victims, be it sexual abuse, physical abuse, that kind of thing, what's a standard protocol, if you will, or is there such a thing, as you walk them through therapy and try to help them begin their journey of healing?
Oh, gee, that's tough. I think the number one thing is just the legal protocol. Anytime a child discloses any sort of abuse, you know, those of us who are mandated reporters, we have to report that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sad because CYF gets involved or some sort of, you know, child rights agency has to get involved, and it usually breaks up the family and all of that, and it's awful. The other piece of that is building rapport with the family and with the kid. The only time I've ever been able to really get to the bottom of my client's abuse history or trauma history is after building rapport. That's utopia.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Now, yeah. Do you get clients that you already know that they've gone through the system, if you will? They've been through child forensic interviews, and there's been an investigation of child abuse and that kind of thing. Do you get them on the back end where you're trying to help them heal after you already know what the situation was, or are you at the front end trying to figure out what's traumatizing that child?
Wow, that's an awesome question. Well, sometimes both. So sometimes I'm right on the front line, and then the other time I am receiving the kid after the whole forensic interview process.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. I think I would prefer to be on the front line, which is kind of walking with the child through the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the back end of that, it's tough because kids already are losing trust. They're already afraid. They're already questioning authority. You know, why are you doing this to me? Why are you breaking up my family or asking me all of these uncomfortable questions? So for me, when I'm on the back end of that process, it's difficult. I have to really move myself out of the way and make sure that I do everything in the best interest of the child.
Very good. Now, how do you actually help families then heal through that on the back end? Because so many families find themselves in that spot, and where sometimes it's a caregiver or a parent or a sibling or, you know, gosh, in 40% of sexual abuse cases, it's somebody in the family. Yeah. 90% it's somebody that the child knows, loves, or trusts. So, you know, there's a lot of healing and fixing that has to go on the back end. And you mentioned that children sometimes will lose trust if they are, you know, separated from families or, you know, whatever the situation might be, that's done in their best interest. So how do you help families cope with that and heal?
I love providing psychoeducation to families. I think right away for me, it's just, like I said, just building rapport, talking with them, trying to understand what is the major issues here and how can I, you know, get in and kind of help you guys cope or help the family cope. The other piece of that is educating the family. These are the symptoms that you're going to see in your kids. These are the symptoms you are also likely to have as the parent, and how are you going to deal with that? Teaching cognitive behavior therapy to parents, you know, how are your thoughts going to affect your behaviors and for your child as well? And again, teaching those coping skills, making sure that they have crisis supports, making sure that they identify natural supports, family, friends, church, pastors. So it really is an effort of reaching out to the community too, and making sure that families have that immediate access to help if they need it.
Now, this may seem like a silly question, but I've never been through a therapy session. I'm assuming you probably do sessions alone with the child and then alone with the parents and then kind of some group sessions. I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. I start out with, like, it's an assessment session, basically, and it's typically 30 minutes to 45 minutes, and it's really just getting background information. So, you know, demographics and abuse history, drug and alcohol history, you know, family history. Mm-hmm. The second session is typically the parent session, and that's when I only meet with the parent to obtain collateral information or information that they have about the kid's education, you know, extended family. And then I bring the child in into the session with the parent, and I want to observe, how is mom or dad and that child communicating? Is it strained? Do they need more parenting skills? Do they need supports? So it's again, Ginger, meeting with them for the first time in assessment mode, making sure that I get all the information. Second session is the parent, and the third session is both parent and child.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then do you continue sessions on past that then, I assume, or not?
Yes, which is basically split up between an individual session with the child and I, and a parent in a family session with just the parent, the child, and I.
Okay. Now, for younger kids, I hear a lot about play therapy. Is that something that you employ?
I do not, and I think it's just because it's such a tricky topic.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's been studies from, you know, the forensic psychology area that play therapy is a little bit tricky and it's controversial and, you know, we're lacking research on it. Does this really help? Does it make things worse? So I try to stay away from that, Ginger.
Oh, that sounds good. No, I'm glad to know that because I don't know a lot about that. I just hear that sometimes that is used in terms of even trying to help children, you know, just get to a point of disclosure. So, okay. Now, and when you're building rapport with kids, what kind of things do you do?
Absolutely. I think a lot of humor is important.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think that really breaks down barriers and it lets, you know, kids see that you're human too. Mm-hmm. Also sharing my own personal experiences, but being very structured and methodical with that. Mm-hmm. I will share some of the incidents in my life where I've been slightly traumatized myself and I've had to learn how to cope. That often creates some sort of, we call it in therapy, joining. And it's when two people come together, you know, on something that they can agree on or something that's similar between two people. So I use my own disclosure sometime, laughing, humor, like I said. And then the other piece of that is my psychology, Ginger, is decorating my office in a way that makes kids feel welcomed.
Yeah.
And my colleagues are like, you know, they usually say to me, I don't understand understand why you have so many toys around and so many, and I have to explain, it's for the kids. It's not for me.
Oh, absolutely.
Although some therapists have said my, you know, lunch break is probably playing with the toys, but it's not.
You have to restrain yourself from doing that, right?
Exactly. But, yeah, just making sure that kids feel welcome in my office, too. That helps a lot.
Oh, Tamara, you know what? I love hearing that because, actually, that is a kind of a common model used by child advocacy centers around the country, you know, trying to make it child-friendly so it doesn't feel sterile. You know, there are, you know, toys and games and fish tanks and, you know, colorful walls and just all kinds of great stuff, which does. It really does kind of help take things down a little bit for kids and make them feel more at home.
Yes.
More quickly. So I love that. I'd love to see a picture of your office, actually.
Oh, you would love that.
I think I would. I think I totally would. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell us a little bit? I know that you are a guest columnist for Psych Central. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, I love Psych Central. They are awesome. I actually do a couple of things through them. I started with them back in 2013, I believe. And I actually approached the main leader, I want to call him the senior person of Psych Central, Dr. Groha, and I asked him, would you be, you know, interested in me kind of, you know, educating your audience and talking to your audience about mental health and topics that families, caregivers, parents find frustrating? And he said, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. And, you know, Ginger, that has been the most wonderful opportunity for me. I've had, you know, exposure to a lot of families and patients and clients. And I think I've built like a really good following and relationship with the audience through Psych Central. So I totally love it.
And you've got some wonderful articles on there. And again, I will make sure that we have a link to your column or your section as well, so people can go and check you out, because you've got some wonderful, wonderful articles on there.
Thank you.
And then you also wrote a book. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. I'm going to be honest here, and this is part of my disclosure that I do with my kids, too, is I was afraid, for lack of a better word, to write a book. I mean, I thought, I can't do this. I'm not ready. This is going to take up my time. My schedule's already a mess, and each day I would just take bits and pieces of my schedule and find some time to just start writing. I was inspired by, you know, news reports and clients, and I mean, it was an interesting and very tedious experience, but Ginger, I wouldn't trade it for anything. Many of my clients who read my book, Mental Health in a Failed American System, you know, they typically share with me how blessed they feel that they have that information. One of my other clients said, I feel like you're actually walking with me through this complicated system. So it's very humbling to have written a book in the first place. But it's even more humbling when you have somebody say, we're benefiting from what you write.
Oh, that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah.
You know, making a difference in the world. Good for you. And then how can people find you, Tamara?
Yeah. One place is Twitter. I'm actually on Twitter. You can find my name. It's Tamara H. I'm also on Pinterest. I'm not a Facebook fan. I hate to say that.
That's okay.
I have no idea. Ginger, maybe you can teach me how to make Facebook work for me, but I fail every time.
Okay. I'm glad to talk with you about that.
That's awesome. I could barely like figure out how to do Skype, so I think I'm doing good.
Oh, I think you're doing great.
Thanks, Ginger. And also, you know, my personal website, anchoredinknowledge.com. That's where you can find everything me there. So
fantastic. Well, Tamara, it has absolutely been a pleasure having you here, and thank you so much for sharing your experience as a therapist, and I really look forward to having you come back and talk some more about different issues. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you. You're so wonderful.
Oh, back at you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in and for being a kid's hero. If you enjoyed today's show, please leave Ginger a 5-star rating on iTunes. After all, the more we join forces to raise awareness about child abuse prevention, the more kiddos we can protect. Register for Ginger's free 3-part video series about preventing child sexual abuse at beakidshero.com. Also, visit Dr. Will's other neighborhood friends at drwill.com. Here's to improving the world, one child at a time.